The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. As the medical expert, Jay Oliver here, as we get ready for another Saturday afternoon of learning about what's happening with the Peconic Bay Medical Center and, of course, the great, great individuals they have present there. And certainly in store today as we look forward to talking with Dr. Kashik Mathani. He happens to be the chair of family medicine at the great PVMC. And we welcome Dr. Mathani to the airwaves. Sir, how are you? Hope you're doing well.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Yes, I'm doing well.
It is great to have you. You know, when I hear about family medicine, I always like to see if I can get a further explanation. Doctor, what exactly are we talking about regarding family medicine?
Okay, yeah. So family medicine, it's a specialty out of medical school. So I went to medical school. I graduated medical school. Upon completion of that, I did a residency in family medicine. And family medicine is one of the paths to primary care. So primary care is, you know, if you're a patient, who do you first go to see a problem? Let's say I have maybe I have chest pain. Often you can't get into the cardiologist first. You have to see a primary care doctor, and that's a family medicine doctor. Internal medicine also is a primary care doctor. Even urgent care we consider primary care. So if you have any problem, it's the first doctor you go to. And it's really, family medicine is different than internal medicine and even urgent care in that it's more like comprehensive health for people of all ages. So that includes pediatric patients and geriatric patients, even pregnant patients. You know, we are advertised that we can see patients as from cradle to the grave. And I really want to emphasize that word comprehensive also is urgent care can also see anybody as well, but family medicine kind of really delves into preventative medicine and a holistic philosophy on your patients.
You know, it's almost as if you cover the entire palate, so to speak. You know, you cover everything that the family can go in one fell swoop, as I like to say on my show. But you cover the gambit as far as maladies are concerned. And, you know, when we think about family medicine and physicians of that nature, it's almost a lost art because of the specialties out there and the conglomerates that everything is attached to, PPOs, HMOs, and everything else. But it's good to see family medicine and say it in a sentence, you know?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, when I went to medical school, I felt strongly that I want to be someone that people turn to, my friends, my loved ones, if they have a problem, and I want to know what's going on. And if I decided to do a subspecialty, I might not have the knowledge that I have. You know, I have a basic knowledge of every condition in primary care, and God forbid I'm on an airplane and somebody has a problem. I know I'm confident that I can handle it and at least get them to a level where, you know, hopefully, you know, you can save them and prevent any complications. But any patient that presents suddenly, you know, I feel like I can help them and I can tend to them.
And it's good to hear, no question about it. We're talking with Dr. Kashik Mathani. He's the chair of family medicine at the Great Peconic Bay Medical Center. Now, it says here, I was reading, you are a hospitalist doctor. A hospitalist, I haven't heard that one in a long time. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, that's a good question. So hospitalist medicine, hospitalists, they're a field probably about 20 or so years in the making. There was a doctor, Dr. Robert Watcher, who wrote a big article in the New England Journal kind of introducing this concept. And it's a doctor that's stationed in the hospital for shift work. So my current role is I come to the hospital from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., for 7 days at a time, and then for the next 7 days, it's another hospitalist that covers those hours. And prior to this system, it was a different model. So prior to this system, I may be a doctor in the outpatient setting, and if my patient gets sick, I would have to make time to see them. Usually I would cut patients short, maybe end my day at 2 p.m., or maybe get to the hospital at 6 a.m., see my patients. So if patient John Smith, for example, was my patient that I've seen for 20 years, all of a sudden have a stroke, he's in the hospital. I would probably, you know, I think with the stroke, it's a major condition. I would try to get to the hospital at 6 a.m., see him once, write my notes, do whatever work I can. And then after my patients are done, I can deal with any issues that presented throughout the day. So that's an old system. Over the last 20 years, gradually, pretty much every hospital has adopted this hospitalist system, which is a shift work of a doctor who's devoted just to the hospital.
That's a great explanation and really great to kind of, you know, it almost brings you back to the old days when you had those physicians availability and would go to the hospital and would kind of do double, triple work as far as what they would normally do. But a person in charge, you explained it very well, to get to that hospital to deal with a patient. What was it like for you caring for patients all during this pandemic we're all in right now? Give us a couple of things in which things have, I mean, you know, life has changed for all, but from your standpoint, where's the difference?
Oh, so, you know, I don't know how much time you have to talk about this, but I'll give a brief overview. Initially, I was a little bit in denial. You would hear reports that this virus was from abroad and was causing some headlines, and I was saying, oh, there's no chance it can really, or there's a really mild chance that it can affect us. And I was actually a medical student during MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, and I didn't really directly deal with it. It was something that everybody was taking precautions from, but it didn't affect the average person. So I was thinking, you know, maybe this would be something like that. But much to my surprise, and it was an unpleasant surprise, it quickly and rapidly spread. And our hospital, which normally can see about 110, 120 patients, was overfilled way beyond capacity with COVID patients. And if you had asked me in my career, would I have ever guessed that almost 100% of everybody in the hospital had one disease, I would have said no way. I remember vividly on April 7th, our hospital had 135 patients. And out of those 135 patients, about 123 or so had COVID. And the rest, you know, had the rare condition of heart attack and stroke. And I just kind of say that jovially because they're not rare. But, you know, basically more than 90% of the hospital census had COVID. And these were very sick patients. And we had to make some difficult decisions. You know, there were a lot of limited resources in the hospital. And we had to be really judicious on who could stay home and quarantine versus who needed hospital care, such as oxygen, fluids, you know, and more closer care, closer monitoring. And we would see people also that we thought were at time zero okay to go home, but they would come back 2-3 days later much sicker. And it was a disease that we were learning on the fly about, you know, and what also was really frustrating was there was a lot of hype on early treatments, and none of them really panned out in the literature except for maybe steroids, and there was some antivirals also, but even those are controversial. But each doctor in this pandemic, we were glued to the medical news and the medical literature that what did they do in Seattle, Washington, what could we take from there? What is this latest trial showing? And, you know, something I tell the residents, the medical residents all the time is we kind of witness the scientific method in real time. And, you know, science and studies and medical literature, it's a slow process. So here we have a disease that, like I said, on April 7th had about 95% of the hospital census, and it was a expanded census than the hospital can handle. And you have the best names in all of the world, all the best scientists trying to study this, trying to study that, and data comes slowly, and data is questioned and rejected and reaccepted. And it was just a really kind of a realistic example of how science works in real time. And it was frustrating, you know, without a doubt, that here we have this disease that's killing people, and there's only so much we can do about it.
Yeah, well explained.
Yeah, that's what I can say in a nutshell. I'll try to.
No, listen, well explained. We're going to get into more regarding some COVID and some other things. Well done, doctor. You stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with Dr. Kashif Mathani. He is chair of family medicine at the Peconic Bay Medical Center. Another edition of Ask the Medical Expert. We'll take a quick break and come back to you right after these words. And we're back. We are talking with Dr. Kashif Mathani. He's the chair of family medicine at the Peconic Bay Medical Center. Another edition, ladies and gentlemen, of Ask the Medical Expert, and all concerning the tremendous institution on the East End as far as the Peconic Bay Medical Center in Riverhead. And we're talking a lot regarding family medicine and being a hospitalist and COVID. You know, Doc, one more thing. We'll get out of the COVID category. And that is, you know, what would you say to anyone who might be a little troubled, a little nervous maybe about getting their preventative health care or wellness visit because of COVID-19? We know a lot of people kind of put that on hold as far as their own health. What would you tell folks right now?
I think we all need to take precautions day to day. And, you know, we need to be mindful that there is a pandemic, but we also need to be on top of our general health. And you know, nobody knows how long this pandemic and all these precautions are going to last. You know, something I would like to bring to light is in our hospital, they checked all of the hospital workers for COVID antibodies. And there was actually a smaller percentage of those of us who you know, had COVID antibodies, which means we were exposed to COVID. Than the general population. And I think the reason for that is we took every precaution. You know, we were washing our hands, we were wearing our masks, our N95s for COVID patients. So, you know, I think that my message to translate that to the general community is that we have to take our precautions, and we should try to get on with our life, including, you know, our regular well visits, as long as we're taking precautions, including personal protective equipment, PPE, and social distancing. So it's a good time to do it. You know, now is a good time when you know, the rates of positive tests are still low. You know, it's a good time to do it.
No doubt. Now, I hear also from what I was reading, Doctor, that you are a critical part of Peconic Bay Medical Center's graduate medical education. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that program actually offers?
Sure. So that term, graduate medical education, or GME, is a it's a big term. So basically, it's the term for residency. So upon completion of medical school, you decide to choose a specialty, and it's training post medical school that's still supervised. So my medical school, you know, first few years, it's a lot of book work. In the third and fourth years, there's some clinical exposure, but I'm not making decisions then. As a resident, I've graduated, I have my degree, and I'm making decisions while being supervised. So basically, that whole residency is graduate medical education. It encompasses every specialty. So if somebody's in internal medicine, family medicine, OBGYN, they're all called graduate medical education. They're in that community.
Excellent. And a lot on the line when it comes to this stuff, no question, as far as what's being offered here. What about, doctor, someone who teaches the next generation of doctors? What are you noticing in that regard these days?
Oh, it's exciting. Medical students are, you know, I graduated in 2010, and that was only 10 years ago. And I feel being involved in the residence training and seeing what medical students are taught, it's still significantly different than just 10 years ago. I think medical schools are emphasizing some really good core concepts that I don't remember being so emphasized in my time. So some of those concepts are like compassion, empathy, use of open-ended questions. You know, I think we were kind of encouraged to do that when I was in medical school, but these current medical students, they're getting a whole new training on that where I think the medicine community is responding to maybe complaints that medicine has been depersonalized, so they're addressing that head on. And additionally, the medical students they're learning like anatomy and all their classes on a different level using technology. So one thing that's becoming very popular is ultrasound. So ultrasound they say is like the new stethoscope. Basically, there are even these pocket ultrasounds that you can attach to your phone. And you can see, you know, anatomy in real time on a sick patient or on whoever. So this is something that I also was not trained in medical school. So there's so many new concepts that are coming out each year to make these, new doctors even more well-rounded and versatile and, compassionate and humanistic.
Seems that way, no question. What about, as far as traits, is there anything that distinguishes recent doctors from their predecessors? Can you pinpoint anything as far as you know, from the old days, recent doctors from the old doctors?
Yes, sure, without a doubt. So old doctors, you know, they will pride themselves on their physical exam skills, and they may point out that today we're quick to through an image and modern imaging techniques at the expense of our physical exam skills. And then I think, like you alluded to before, the older generation wasn't as specialized and can kind of do a little bit of everything. You know, like my first job was with a doctor, Dr. Sadat, and he was doing like minor surgical procedures in the office and things like that. And he was family medicine as well. Whereas the new doctors, you know, you would refer them to a surgeon. On the flip side of that, the new doctors are much more connected as a whole. And even social media is like a very prevalent a thing used amongst the new doctors where they're getting information in real time. So in the olden days, you know, if you wanted to understand a chapter or a topic, you would open a textbook. Believe it or not, the words written on that textbook that were just published and released today, those words are probably 10 years old. They're based on 10 years ago studies and edits and re-edits and things like that. Today, the new doctor, on social media, you're getting, and even COVID was a great example of this, you're getting pre-publication that's really accessible to everybody. Data that's really raw that anyone can access at any time, and it's much more transparent and it's kind of more raw and open to interpretation. So you know, you know there's like a huge community on Twitter called Med Twitter, and everybody is excited to share what they have and the earliest results of their studies. Additionally, I think telemedicine is a big thing that is highlighted by the new generation, and also really came to light in the pandemic, where doctors can do a basic visit by use of a screen remotely, and could tend to certain needs. You know, I don't think you can do a comprehensive exam yet on telemedicine, but a lot of basic things could be done over telemedicine. So those are some insights on new generation versus old generation.
Yeah. Doc, in the remaining time I have, which is about a minute and a half, what would you say to anyone considering going into the profession, the medical profession, as a result of COVID-19 right now? What would you tell folks as far as that thinking is concerned?
So there's a great reward, I feel, out of being a doctor and helping others. And similarly, great reward, I feel, in training residents as well, is you see the improvement of a patient, you see the improvement of a resident from fresh graduate to somebody who really knows as much or even more than myself. So number one is I always feel like, to somebody interested in medicine, I always feel like there's always room for you. There's plenty of room in this medicine community. It's a nice job with good reward, and it's a stable job that, you know, the pandemic really highlighted that many jobs were furloughed or whatever. Our jobs were really valued in that time, and our jobs really could not be substituted with artificial intelligence or anything like that. There's a thought process involved in medicine that, at the moment, artificial intelligence cannot measure up to. So I think, you know, to any young student listening, it's just a rewarding profession that has a need, and it's a stable profession, you know, for many years to come.
I tell you, well said throughout, my friend. Great stuff. Continue the great work. Good to see family medicine coming back into play, and especially that of a hospitalist, which is also great to hear about. Dr. Kashik Mithani, ladies and gentlemen, the great chair of the Family Medicine Department at Pecanipay Medical Center. You've been listening to another edition of Ask the Medical Expert. Jay Oliver here, and we'll see you next week. Have a wonderful rest of your Saturday.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.